I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan. We're two women in our 40s who live in different states and have a lot of different interests between us.
On this show, we talk about all the midlife lady leisure pursuits we're enjoying at this stage of life, like travel, hobbies, food, wellness, style, and more.
And I'm super excited today to chat about one of my personal favorite leisure pursuits, foraging, which can be defined as basically wandering around your yard or neighborhood looking for plants to nibble on. But we'll get into that in a minute.
Today's episode is brought to you by our exclusive season sponsor and a longtime partner of ours, Vionic Shoes. Vionic is the perfect combo of stylish and super comfortable, and they really help keep me moving. Use the promo code MIDLIFE at VionicShoes.com for 15% off when you log into your account. And be sure to check out the special page we've set up where you can see our favorite Vionic styles. You can look for that in the show notes for this episode.
Yes, thanks to Vionic for sponsoring this episode, and let's dive right into talking about foraging. Okay, Sarah, remember how in the kayaking episode, I talked about a dream I used to have about like floating down a body of water in a small vessel close to the side so I could like reach out and touch the plants. And then when I woke up, I realized, oh, that was kayaking and I can actually do that, right? So for me, foraging is a little bit different, but it's still like one of those core memories or core desires that I feel like was somewhere hidden deep within me and got super unlocked in midlife. It's funny when I look back, some of my very earliest memories are either foraging adjacent or sort of like related. So I remember picking wild blueberries with my mom in the Upper Peninsula. They're everywhere up there in July and sometimes in August from a very young age, like 3 or 4. I remember this field behind my house when I was, again, about 3 or 4. And there was, I mean, it wasn't a huge field, probably about the same size as my backyard now, but like it felt so enormous to a little kid. And I remember walking back there and picking those tall grasses that look a little like wheat. There probably are some kind of like
wheat derivative.
You know, and picking those and like carrying them around and thinking I would go find a place to make a soup out of them. Aww. Like I just remember always being so fascinated by the edible side of food you can find everywhere and the medicinal side of it. I guess I just, it took me until my 40s to realize like this is a thing people still do. I guess it just felt magical or something.
Yeah. And there's something about, I'm just thinking of my own childhood memories as you're talking. I don't think I very much got to the point of thinking about edible or medicinal, but think about how much closer to the ground you are as a small child.
That is
you're just
so true.
Sitting in and picking. And I can remember making like the clover headbands, like clover chains, just sitting in the grass and making clover chains for hours. We used to eat sourgrass. Do you have sour? I think it's a California thing. We called it sourgrass. They're just weeds and they have a bright yellow flower, like highlighter yellow, almost neon yellow. And you can just pull them up and just chew on the end and it just tastes sour. And when you're like third, fourth, fifth grade, that felt like very cool. You're just like walking home from school,
like
chewing sour grass. But I think I did not have the part where I thought, oh, what could I make out of this? But I definitely remember picking and, you know, holding and sitting in plants in a way you just don't do when you're an adult.
You don't usually. And I think also, I mean, I think there was a part, there was some fear kind of getting wrapped all up in that, maybe in the 80s and 90s too, where like,
yeah,
you couldn't gnaw on the end of a piece of clover without some adult telling you you were going to die. You know, you couldn't pick a berry that was very obviously an edible berry. And not to get too weird about it, but I do think there's some innate knowledge that you have. Like as a little child, I knew that something that kind of looked like a blackberry that came off a tree was okay to eat, whereas something that looked more like a birdberry, you know, like one of those
like
round,
a holly berry or something. Yeah, yes.
Might not be. And recently I was reading that almost all segmented berries are safe to eat. So like everything from that family, raspberries, blackberries, mulberries, like they all have those, they're segmented, right? They have like little, you know, juicy little whatever you call them, bumps. Those are almost always safe to eat, whereas a lot of the round, smooth, shiny ones are not safe to eat. And I feel like there's somewhere buried in us some innate understanding of that, that we don't always trust because we live in a world where everything outside seems kind of scary and dangerous. And so in my 40s, and hopefully for the rest of my life, this is something I'm definitely, I guess, just reclaiming for myself.
I love this for you.
It really started a few years ago because I got into hunting morel mushrooms. Talk about something to be, you know, afraid of. But if you know the difference between a morel and a false morel, you will not make the mistake. Like if you just know what to look for, it's pretty obvious. Which isn't to say like go crazy and just eat every edible looking mushroom that you see, because definitely there are some that will kill you or make you very sick. But it's not quite the minefield that it's been made to seem like. And so that was my gateway, I think. And then that kind of led to me looking for just other opportunities. And now when I'm out, I am just foraging all the time. Like I always have my eyes out looking for, ooh, what could this be? What could that be? And I do feel like I'm right about plants more often than I expect to be, which is also weird. I don't have any like formal botany background. I haven't pored over books with plant drawings. Like sometimes I just know, which I think is also really cool. That's and like
really
why,
interesting,
you know?
Yeah, I love this. Reminding people where we live might be good for this conversation for anybody who's happening upon us anew. You are a Michigander. Where are you foraging mostly in the world? Southwest Michigan or also up north?
It's both. It's very different up north, but it's what I think is really cool is it is so different. So down here in Southwest Michigan, I would be finding like this time of year, I might be finding things like clover or yarrow. Roots would be pretty soon. Those are more of a fall thing. Like almost anything. I'm just like kind of stumbling over myself because there's so many things out there that are medicinal or can or edible and can be foraged. But if I were up north right now, I'd probably be finding different things. Like wild blueberries might still be in season up there right now, and they're very rampant. If you go far enough north, there's a berry called a thimbleberry, which you would never see down here. It's a really delicate little berry that grows like along the shores of Lake Superior and close to there. And some of the things are the same, but some are different, which I also think is really cool. Like, what would you see where you are?
Well, so this episode is mostly going to be me asking you questions because I am not an experienced forager. But something I have observed as I've got like kind of reestablished myself in Santa Barbara, California, where I live, coastal, right on the border between Central and Southern California. Coastal chaparral is like our, what do you call that? Like your biome, there's a name for it. Like the type of natural landscape.
Yeah, biosphere? Not like ecosystem, something like
that. Yeah, but it is anyway.
Yeah.
We're chaparral. There's like a thing I've inherited from reading so many books as a child about forests and woods. And I almost have like kind of discounted California, like as if like it doesn't count.
You because you don't have all sorts of plants there.
Exactly. And of course, there's like a long indigenous tradition of the Chumash, like making things medicinally. And of course, we know things grow in California commercially. So there's a lot of like commercial food that's grown. But I don't know very much about what grows wild and native. And I think I have, because it looks a little drier, it looks like shrubs. It doesn't look like a lush forest unless you have watered it, unless you have cultivated it. And so I think I might have written it off in a way that I really shouldn't, because yeah, there would be a lot of so I know the indigenous people did a lot with acorn. And so there's like, we always learned about that in school growing up. And like, if you eat an acorn raw, it's bitter and can make you sick. But then of course, what, how would they do things with it? But yeah, I am not very educated on this and I would like to be more.
Well, I think you raise a really good point, maybe in a roundabout way, that we all tend to discount what we're surrounded with all the time.
Yeah,
I don't think most people, if you've, so I've grown up in Michigan. I lived in Michigan almost my entire life. And when I first started getting into this, I would look out into my yard and be like, well, that's just a bunch of weeds. It's just a bunch of grass. Or it looks like someone's cultivated plants for their garden, not realizing that half of the stuff that I bought to put into the perennial garden in my yard, in my front yard, are edible herbs that are in some places considered weeds, you know? So it's like, it's also context oriented, and we're so disconnected from it. Like, we're so not used to looking around us and seeing food or medicine. Yeah. We're used to going into grocery stores and seeing food and medicine.
Yeah, that's such a good point.
And I think for me, now that my eyes have been kind of opened to it, I will everywhere, like I'll be walking through a neighborhood in someone's yard and I'll be like, ooh, I wonder what that is. I bet it's edible, you know, and I pull out my little app and look, and most of the time, in some ways, it has been used, even if it's not being used like anymore medicinally, it has some purpose, medicinal or edible, or both. And as to the acorns, I mean, acorns have kept people alive.
Yeah.
Like, you can make flour out of acorns, and like that can sustain you. So that is really legit. And I bet you have a lot of roots and
then barks. When you get all the way to the coast, there's things like kelp, and there's like, you know, sea related for, I'm sure that people get into that, like the type of foraging that happens in, you know, at the ocean and nearby the ocean. So
even since the time of agriculture, there has always been wild food that has sustained people throughout time. So like, it's there.
Yeah. Well, I will have to report back in some future installment, because I know I will leave today inspired to know more. But let's talk about your foraging in Michigan. I mean, let's just start with like the safety that you brought up. When morels, maybe you did some reading and you were looking for a very specific thing, but when you wanted to branch out, how do you know what's safe? Do you ever feel like it's not okay to pick something? Like, are there ethical implications? Mm-hmm. And I'm such a rule follower, I can imagine myself getting more hung up. I wonder if you just kind of like, you know, it'll probably be fine.
Well, this is a very fair question, especially because we do live in a time where, maybe unlike hundreds of years ago, there is a lot of concern about property rights, pesticides, overall safety, because we are so disconnected from this. So there's a few guidelines. First of all, as far as the actual plant itself, like, is this plant safe to pick and eat? I usually have a two-step verification method that I use personally. I have an app called Seek, S-E-E-K, that I've pay for.
Yeah.
And it will like allow you with like a lot of accuracy to identify plants when you're out. So basically you just point the little camera at it. You kind of take it from a couple of angles. Sometimes it gets stuck on the genus, like can't dial in all the way, but most of the time it will give me the actual plant if I keep at it long enough. And so once I have that, I just save it to my, you know, I save it to my little, like you can save your observations in the app. And then when I get home, and then I also take a picture of it. And then when I get home, I cross-reference that picture against some internet site or a book. Often a book. I have multiple books that are specific to Midwest foraging, and I can put those into the show notes. And there's probably other – well, there are definitely other ones that are more, like, general, although those ones tend to not be for foragers. They tend to be, like, what to do with – so there's, like, the books for people who are out foraging their communities, and then there are books for people who want to use how to – like know how to use wild edibles and medicinals, which are not quite the same, because one will give you more specific ideas about how to harvest, you know, how to identify and all that. So that's just how to make sure the plant won't make you sick. And The number of plants, like the ratio of plants that will not make you sick to plants that might make you sick, and then there's always the varying degrees, is quite high. Like,
yeah.
95% of what I find is not going to make me sick if I nibble a leaf or make a tea out of it. There are some things that are quite toxic. There are things that are really toxic to certain animals, but not at all to humans. And so, like, there's also diving into that. But I like to just, I like to double ID, because a lot of plants do sort of look the same. And sometimes you'll find that, like, certain plants in a family look very similar, but they're different varieties. And some, like, the sap might make you itchy, or, like, the leaves have, like, a little hairy substance on them that might make you break out. So it's not like, okay, I'm going to start vomiting if I eat this. It's more like, just don't mess with it. So it's just good to have that double verification. Then there's other things to keep in mind. Like, you probably don't want to go forage like alongside a busy highway or a road that's really traveled, because there will be exhaust, and there's like the pavement itself will soak up motor oil and stuff like that. Like, it can really travel to the edges. We live near train tracks. I had a an experienced forager herbalist come over and kind of walk the property with me. And I said, would you feel comfortable, you know, foraging this close to the train tracks? And she said, oh yeah. Like, I wouldn't do it along the train tracks, but where I was, I'm far enough away that I'm not going to be absorbed. You know, the plants and the soil aren't going to be absorbing a lot of that. And we also have a water source in our backyard, which also helps. Like, that's kind of like everything is flushing through. Right. So it's like, getting some knowledge about what's safe in your area and maybe talking to an expert, it really gave me a lot more confidence talking to her. There are a lot of herbalists out there now who will come to your property for a few $100s and walk your property with you. And
that's cool.
Like, show you plants and, like, show you what's likely to grow in your area and tell you why. So that's another way. Like, if you need some, I don't know, if you just need a little confidence boost, I guess. Now, if you don't have any, if you don't even have any kind of a yard, I would actually encourage anybody with a yard of any size to start there. You might just be really surprised. But, you know, when you're out and about, you might be in a park. You might be, like, walking through a neighborhood and see stuff in the boulevard. So there's plants everywhere. And that's kind of when, like, the ethical side starts to kick in, because you can't go plant, like, picking stuff off people's property without asking them.
Right.
Although, like, I guess I wouldn't probably shy away from picking dandelions out of the little strip of grass out in front of someone's yard, because most people don't want them. But, I mean, common sense, right? Like, you're not going to go fill up several bushels of plants you're finding in people's yards. And sometimes it's not so obvious when something is public or private property. So that's definitely something to keep in mind too. Some public lands, like some parks, it's a free for all, take what you want. And some have much, much stricter rules about that. So it's always a good idea to, like, I guess, familiarize yourself with the rules about in your jurisdiction. Like, what are the rules about taking things home with you? And then the other ethical question is, are there herbs that are being over foraged, over collected? There absolutely are, but the things I'm collecting are almost always considered weeds. So then it's just like, take it. Like, take as much as you want, because this plant is not endangered. Like, if you were out trying to find wild, like, wild ginseng is an example of something that has been way over harvested. And so you wouldn't want to go, like, just finding that in the wild. There's a lot of pretty specific ethical practices you're supposed to follow. And I don't bother with that. Like, if it's something that I feel like is iffy, I don't even look for it. So then I don't have to worry about it. The stuff I am looking for is, like, truly folk medicine. It is like the weeds growing in your backyard. And that's my comfort level. There's other sort of ethical, I don't even want to say ethical guidelines, more like just the guidelines of reciprocity, I guess.
Yeah, like, good steward of
good
the land.
Stewardship. Stewardship. Yeah. Like, don't pick every berry off a bush, because the birds need them too. Don't take every flowering plant, because the bees need them too. So, you know, there's rules about like what percentage of things that you're supposed to leave behind. I don't worry too much about that because, again, I'm just foraging for one person. I'm not taking massive quantities of anything. I'm not trying to make, like, I'm not making medicines to sell somewhere and getting like as much as I can. I'm picking a handful here and a handful there, but it's still good to be like mindful and just to know about those. So I will also include some links to that sort of thing in the show notes. So that was a really long-winded answer to your question.
I mean, this is totally fascinating. I guess I have a few related questions. One is, are you setting out for the purpose of foraging, or do you find yourself foraging on your walks that maybe are for exercise or as you're moving through your normal life? I would love to hear about that, or if you like very much specifically go out, this is a foraging walk. And then literally, like, what are you carrying? A basket? Are you clipping things with clippers? And then what happens when you come home? Yeah. So I guess this is a big, like, tell me more question.
Yeah. Well, both. It depends. So like I said, I think I'm just kind of always foraging now. I'm always walking around with an eye to, ooh, what's that plant? Ooh, what's this plant? So sometimes it's me walking. I'll give an example. When I'm up in the Upper Peninsula, I take this walk along the boardwalk on Lake Michigan in Manistique. And I'm always amazed by how different it is up there because the plants that kind of come up here in June and then, I don't know, start to look a little worn out pretty quick. Like daisies and clover, they start to look kind of dried out and parched fast here. There, they just last like for months and they look the same. So I can go up there in June and then go back in July and go back in August and it won't look notably different. I think just because the summers are cooler, they're like more mild and cool and maybe the temperatures aren't fluctuating quite as much. I'm not 100% sure. But anyways, I will go for a walk and then I always see stuff I want to forage, but I didn't come prepared. And so then it just looks like the way a little kid comes home to their mom after a walk. Like I've just got a big handful of something pretty and I'm like, ooh, what's this? So that's very different than when I'm here looking out at my backyard and being like, oh, I think maybe the wild raspberries are up. I should go out and get some. And then I know I'm going to be walking through brambles. So it's like, it's an outfit change. It's I'm going out with clippers, maybe gloves if I'm going to be handling a lot of pokey things. And I'll either have we have these little buckets that like kind of sit on your hip and then have a strap around your waist.
Yeah,
so you can kind of put stuff in them. Or little mesh bags that have they're like the lingerie bags that you clean your, you know, that you put your underwear in. Like that with a zipper, and then those usually have some kind of a wrist handle.
Oh, smart.
So sometimes I'll have both of those. And then it's like I go out with an eye to forage. Like I am going foraging. Same thing if I go in the woods behind our house. And then, but there's also just walking through a neighborhood and seeing something with that eye. Maybe I just grab one and tuck it away in a pocket and then show up with it at home and study it and see if I'm interested in looking for more of that. It's more like, ooh, yeah, it's a sample. It's like, I didn't know this. What is this thing? Like, what is this little flower or what is this piece of green? So it's like, it just kind of depends. But I do have trimmers. I do have varieties, sizes of mesh bags. I do have like a thing to collect them with. I just don't always use them. And there are quite expensive kits you can buy that I think are mostly for the aesthetics, honestly.
Sure.
You know, just because
to help people feel like, you know,
they're doing a thing.
It helps you feel good if you buy all the gear. When you're starting a new hobby, it's like we've all been down that slope. As you're talking, I'm realizing, so we're pretty avid backyard gardeners at this point, and we also have fruit trees and avocado trees on our property. So it's not that different than when I go out to harvest. Right. I'm just harvesting cultivated, not wild.
Right.
So,
yeah. Yeah, it's very similar. And in another way it's really similar is that you didn't plant those trees. So in a way, it is kind of like you just discovered food growing in your yard.
Yeah,
it's like,
that's true.
You know what I mean? Like it is cultivated. So it's not exactly the same as wild edibles, but you are still kind of adventuring out and just taking what there is. And sometimes maybe that looks like walking past and grabbing one because you just feel like having one. And sometimes it might look like you have to go do a whole thing and put them in a basket or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when I get home, so sometimes they just end up strewn all over my peninsula and I don't do anything with them for days. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I hang them upside down. I have a closet we don't really use for much. It's a hall closet that it just never really got outfitted as a hall, like a linen closet. So it just has like a bar, but no one hangs their coats in there either. So okay. I have just kind of taken it over and I hang things in there. I hang them. I have like a plant stand that you've seen before. I think I got it on Wayfair. Mm-hmm. We talked about it. I do tie like bunches of herbs from the bar at the top. I use those mesh bags. The mesh bags are also great for drying things that are like maybe like clover heads or things like that, that have like a little piece that it's not as stemmy. I'll often put those in there, or sometimes I use them fresh. So sometimes if I want to make a tea or something, I'll just use the herbs fresh. Okay. Yeah, it kind of depends on the use. And I have tea is definitely like the number one thing that I do, but I have also gotten into doing more tinctures and oils and things like that. And that is something I wanted to do for like my whole entire life and just never did. And then I was like, it's literally pouring cheap vodka over herbs and leaving them in a jar for a long time. That's it. That's the whole thing. So I did that last year. So now I have a bunch of tinctures for this year.
And knowing, back to the knowing what's what, it's your books and your online research that has led you to know, okay, for this plant,
yes,
some medicinal uses include. Could you give some examples of what those medicinal, I mean, for someone who's truly not ever experienced natural or herbal medicine, like what are some common ailments that you might try some of your herbal remedies on?
Yeah. So, okay. So we're all familiar with echinacea, right? Mm-hmm. Like we know that this is an immune boosting thing. Well, echinacea is also called coneflower. It grows in people's gardens. It's the one with the sort of like, I don't even know, bumpy looking nodule. And then big colorful petals. So those you put the stems and the flowers, like kind of all of it, the root, can all get kind of chopped up, cleaned, put in a jar. You pour alcohol over it, let it sit for, I don't know, a couple of months, strain out all the plant pieces, and now you've got an echinacea tincture that you can use when it's cold and flu season, for an example. Yarrow is pretty popular around here. It kind of looks a little like Queen Anne's lace. It also looks a little bit like poison hemlock, but not that much. If you look closely and know what to look for, yes, they are all white flowers. Like they're all tall.
I just had this conversation actually in Oregon with some of my relatives. And we had a big, like, anyway, and we were using not Seek. We were using just the built-in identifier in the iPhone Photos app. And I don't, actually, I think it is powered by Seek. So it might be the same AI.
Yeah.
But anyway. One person was swearing up and down it was Queen Anne's lace, and I don't think it was.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, don't ever listen to somebody who thinks they know something if you don't, like, trust but verify, because people do. It's amazing to me how, like, lackadaisical people can be about it. And I feel like I'm a good mix of, like, cautious but confident. I trust my eyes when I'm looking in a book and it clearly says something like the queen has hairy legs. Okay, so I know that that means Queen Anne's lace is going to have a hairy stem. Mm-hmm. But I'm not just going to be like, well, this looks somewhat fuzzy. I guess that's hairy legs. I'm always going to take it a step further and say, well, what does that actually mean? Like, what does it mean to have a hairy stem? Could I possibly mistake this for that? And I'll do a lot of, I'll often search and like look at things side by side and be like, okay, so how would this get confused for that?
Yeah.
Is it the way the stem looks? Is it the number of flowers or petals on the flower? There's just like, there's always more than one identifier. And I think people can be kind of sloppy in the way.
They probably aren't foraging for food and medicinal. Right. So therefore they've never really had to know for sure, because it's not going to impact them. They're not picking it and eating it.
Exactly.
Wait, I have to go back to tincture because I still don't know what you're doing with the tincture when cold and flu season arrives.
You just drink it. Like
you just drink it. Are you adding it to anything?
You can. Like you,
okay.
You know, it's not a lot. So it might be like 10 drops might be the dose, or 15 drops. Okay. So you could just do that under your tongue, but it tastes terrible. So because it's just pure gut rot alcohol, you know, it's just like really
right,
and it's also kind of bitter. So I usually would add it to some juice or something.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was like, I didn't even know if we were like, yeah, no. Adding it to, or like putting it on your temples or your wrists or something. Like,
well, yeah. And maybe there is another way to use echinacea that is that. I have not. I've only made a tincture out of it. And you can also make them without alcohol. You can distill them down in like glycerin. But we just go for the cheap booze. And also that just extracts it a little bit better. There are other ways you can do it in vinegar and things like that. And there's, I'm going to link up several books that will kind of walk you through that. My recommendation is just to find something you have, pick one project and do one project. It's something, don't start thinking like, oh, I need to build out a whole medicine cabinet for my family or something, but I don't actually know how to use any of this or if I will. Just have one thing. Just pick one.
Yeah.
So the other thing I did last year was yarrow. And that's really good for skin conditions. So with the yarrow, this was one that I actually grew in my garden first so that I could very confidently identify it because it does look a little bit like wild carrot and it looks a little bit, which is also Queen Anne's lace, and it looks a little bit like poison hemlock. I just wanted to be really, really sure. So I grew some in my garden and that's what I harvested last year. And I made an oil from that because once you do an infused oil, you can use that to make a salve. I haven't made the salve yet, but I will be soon. Okay. So that's just two examples of different things that are readily available, like growing around here.
And aside from tea.
Yeah. And I do a lot. I do so many things in tea. Yeah.
Big. That's a whole other episode. Any other edible, like would you ever spread something fresh on a salad or some scrambled eggs or something like
that? Yeah, you know, the stuff I have growing around here, you could, like I know people do that with like dandelion.
Right, but that's not your MO.
It's not the thing I have been doing, no. Okay. I'm more likely to do that with the herbs that I'm growing on purpose.
Right.
You know,
makes sense.
In my garden. Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
But there's, you know, there's like lamb's quarters is another good example of something that is like a little green plant that you can find. It's very abundant. And once you know what it looks like, you can see it everywhere that you can use in salads and things like that. I think I just don't think that way often. Yeah. Or like
makes
clover
sense.
Heads, another example.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine myself popping sometimes like a whole dandelion flower in my mouth and just eating it. I know people do, but it weirds me out a little bit. So I just haven't.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Well, you touched on Seek and the books you're going to link up. Before we wrap, any other tools, apps, resources, and then all of this will be on our Substack, our expanded show notes on our Substack. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that I just think you can start really small and keep it really simple. So maybe there's another app you want to use that's not Seek, but that's the one I'm the most aware of. I guess to get started, I wouldn't worry too much about anything besides two ways to identify and some way to grab it and carry it into your house. Like just start there.
Uh-huh.
And I think we'll have enough of those resources in the show notes that when you're ready to dive a little deeper, you can get into that. Like, there's an author named Rosemary Gladstone. I'm going to link to some of her books because I found them very helpful, especially the ones that are sort of colorful and have drawings and just like one project per couple of pages.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really helpful when you're just getting started. If you get one of her bigger like compendiums that have all these different herbs and all of their medicinal uses, it kind of gets in the way because you're not going to find a lot of those in your area. So then it's like, okay, so I have to order these online. You know, it kind of clouds it. So you have to kind of like, am I going into this as a hobby that's going to get me outside looking at plants, or am I trying to become a medicine woman? Because those are two different things. One might lead to the other, but they're not the same pursuit.
Right.
Yeah. And you don't have to do both. You can just do one or the other. There's people who work with herbal medicine all the time that they order online. And then there's people who go out and forage and find stuff in their yards and like throw it in a tea and they're done with it. There's not, it doesn't have to be both.
Right.
All right. Well, this has been really fun, Sarah. Thank you for humoring me on this midlife lady pursuit of mine. And just a reminder to everybody that, like Sarah said, you can find the expanded episode story that'll have the links we mentioned, maybe a photo or two, and that will be at our Substack at midlifeladyleisurepursuits.substack.com. vionic.com. That's also where you're going to find the special page we have set up with some of our favorite styles from Vionic, our season sponsor. Use the promo code MIDLIFE at vionicshoes.com for 15% off when you log into your account.
All right, everyone. We'll talk to you soon.